At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 107 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee, well, I'm pretty sure he's asleep right now in Kansas City. Unfortunately, he got to be there for that amazing event, and I was at home in Las Vegas just watching, sitting in my office, watching on TV like anybody else, but I am getting to do something pretty fun right now, and that is I've got the Ryzen pay-per-view on in the background, man. Can I tell you how old school this feels right now, man? It's late at night. I got the pay-per-view on. I do got a frosty beverage in my hand. Man, I gotta say, it's old school. It's old school. So, probably would have traded this experience to be there for UFC on Fox 24, as Cold Coffee was. What a hell of a card this was. Hope you watched it, because this thing was great top to bottom. We knew going in it was going to be a fantastic card, but man, did this thing deliver. It was on Fox. It was free, but this was like pay-per-view level action, man. There's no doubt about it. The meaning of the fights was there. You know what I mean? Not only was it exciting fights. I mean, you can take two random opponents and put them together and have some fun. It doesn't give you quite that excitement, but you had meaningful fights, things that really impacted divisions. And then on top of that, you had exciting fights. I mean, so you had everything that you could possibly ask for. UFC on Fox 24, can't believe the UFC is just now getting to Kansas City. Crazy. But they did it in spectacular fashion, topped off by Demetrius Johnson. In my opinion, the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. The best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. I'm sorry. You know, no offense to John Jones, because he is a beast. But, man, Demetrius Johnson is just fantastic, and he beat Wilson Hayes, got the submission in the third round. That's right, submitted the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt in the third round to get his 10th consecutive title defense, tying him with Anderson Silva. You know he's tied with the record now. Man, I'm still just pumped up on adrenaline from this performance. To me, this might have been the finest version of Demetrius Johnson we've ever seen, which that's saying something. Because Demetrius Johnson is, you know, running roughshod over people in the flyweight division. He's doing such a good job that people say there aren't talented fighters in the division. And I hate that. I hate that people say that, because there are talented fighters in the division. He's just a cut above. Demetrius Johnson is just a cut above. And, you know, I don't know if he'll get the credit that he deserves for Wilson Hayes. We talked about it going in. You know, the casual fan has no idea who Wilson Hayes is, but the hardcores know. And Wilson Hayes is tough. Very tough. Accomplished grappler. Ridiculously good Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. You know, former Elite XC champion, if you want to go way back in the day. Demetrius Johnson dominated him. Absolutely dominated. I mean, made him look like a damn amateur. And that's how good Demetrius Johnson is. This, to me, just masterpiece, virtuoso performance, just top to bottom. I just don't see how you can doubt the greatness of Demetrius Johnson any longer. This was flawless victory. This was flawless victory. And if you didn't have your respect before, I hope he has your respect now, because, man, if he doesn't have your respect now, how the hell is he ever going to get it? We're seeing his personality. He's starting to talk in interviews. He's starting to allow himself to be out there. He big upped himself in the cage tonight. He's never done that before. You know, he's starting to realize there's nothing wrong with saying how good I am. There's nothing wrong with saying I am the greatest champion that's ever been. And, dude, you can make that argument. You can make that argument. John Jones is still there. GSP is there. Anderson Silva's there. But even Dana White himself tonight said, I don't know that I can't argue that Demetrius Johnson isn't the greatest of all time. It's absolutely amazing. We could sit here for an hour and just talk about how great Demetrius Johnson is, but I honestly believe he's the best fighter on the planet right now, and we're starting to get in that territory where you got to start talking about him being one of the best of all time. At least one of the best of all time. He's in the conversation. If you want to have the argument that he's not, that's fine, but he's in the conversation. This is the part that I hate about it, is that, you know, people will say, well, John Jones, look at how many ex-champions he built. I hate that argument. Demetrius Johnson can't beat ex-champions. He's the only champion the UFC has ever known. And that in itself is something special. The fact that he is the only UFC flyweight champion in history, that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Not quite 5 years now, but getting pretty damn close. But he's the only one. So I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair to argue that John Jones, you know, beat five former champions. Okay, cool. Are you telling me Demetrius Johnson wouldn't beat those people too? And I don't want to take away from John Jones. I'm a huge John Jones fan. I think he's amazing. Can't wait for him to be back. Personal issues aside, as a fighter, he is incredible. I'm not taking away from John Jones. I think you can make an argument for Demetrius Johnson without insulting John Jones. But that argument that, you know, John Jones beat all these former champions, to me, that's just, it's a garbage argument. Demetrius Johnson has beat everybody, every challenger. Well, should he give away the belt and then beat people for the belt? Is that what he should do? Should he be stripped of the belt every time and then just say, well, now I'm fighting for the belt so he can beat former champions? I mean, come on, that's silly. That's silly. You can't use that argument. That's a stupid argument. You can't use it. I'm sorry. I'll just rule that out now. Demetrius Johnson is incredible. And I'll tell you what else. I see the other argument that I see out there. Demetrius Johnson needs to move up to 135 pounds. He's not being challenged by these people. He needs to move up. I hate that too. I hate that too. Now, if you want to say that, look, I'm not interested in watching a Demetrius Johnson fight because I know he's better than the competition. Okay, I kind of get that, right? I kind of get that. And that's your argument to make. That's your $50 to spend right now. He's not headlining pay-per-views. He's on Fox. He's mostly fighting on free TV. So that kind of takes that out of the equation. But if that's your argument, is saying that I don't want to spend the $50 because I just know this fight's not competitive. Well, I get it. I mean, I don't know how many Floyd Mayweather fights have been competitive over recent years, right? Everybody knew Floyd was the better fighter, but they still bought it anyway because of the persona. But if you watch that interview that we had in Fight Week in Los Angeles earlier this week, Demetrius Johnson said, hey, you know, I'm not going to act that way. I'm only going to act the way I am. I'm not going to go outside of me and be, you know, not true to myself and real in order to sell tickets, and I can respect that. But I don't think that you can say that it's not worth watching. I just think that he's the best possibly martial artist that we've ever seen. And I think even if he's fighting against somebody that you think he's going to beat, it's worth watching because he's that damn good. He's that damn good. But my thing is this. I don't think he needs to go to 135. I don't think he needs to go to 135. I think he needs to just stay at 125 and push this record out as far as he can. You know, he's talking about breaking the record, trying to get it to 11. Now, think about this. There is that kind of asterisk, right? Anderson Silva, the only reason his was 10 is because Travis Luter missed weight. Anderson Silva beat Travis Luter, so you can make the argument that it's 11. So, I would say Demetrius Johnson, if he wants to be completely in the clear, he needs to get it to 12, right? If he wants to get it completely in the clear. But on top of that, I'd say just keep going. 13, 14, 15, 20, 25. I mean, if he can do it, why not do it? And I love the fact that Cody Garbrandt is saying, man, you have to beat me. You know, beat me for 11. And that's cool. Cody Garbrandt needs to go to 125. And if that happens, I'm down. That's a super fight. I'm down. But I don't get the concept that Demetrius has to change weights to challenge himself. I just don't get that. If you prove yourself you're the best in the world at a weight class, then that's what you are. You're the best in the world at a weight class. I mean, I don't know. What do you compare it to? Joe DiMaggio's history. Is that still a record? 56 games, whatever. Hopefully that's still a record. But when he hits the record, you know, do you tell him he's got to go bat left-handed now? Was Joe DiMaggio right-handed? I'm not going to, man. This is why I don't write about other sports. But you know what I'm saying? Like, why do you have to change things up? Why can't he keep being who he is? I'm sorry. That's what I think. Now, you know, if he wants to make more money and that's imperative to him and important to him, then yeah, maybe you got to move weight classes and all that. Because I get it. As a consumer, if you're saying, I'm not interested because I know he's going to win, that's your $50, man. That's your time. That's whatever. But to me, this is like watching, you know, Babe Ruth play or Michael Jordan play or whoever, man. This guy's one of the best ever, and he's just absolutely incredible. And he got it done tonight, submitting the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt. Not just winning, not just dominating from start to finish, but then getting the submission too. I just don't know what else you can ask. I don't know what else you would want from him. So just let's pay some honor to Demetrius Johnson and get his thoughts on how this thing played out at UFC on Fox 24.
I guess, is the moral of the story that if you ask Demetrius Johnson to go to the ground and play with some jiu-jitsu, then you might get what you ask for?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Wilson Hayes, he's a great guy. He's had 30 MMA fights. He's a black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and that's the first time he's ever gotten submitted. So that just shows you the type of stuff I'm working up with Matt Hume, Brad Kurtz, and AMC Pickrish in Kirkland, Washington. I'm a white belt in jiu-jitsu. I haven't really been able to put a lot of time into my gi game, but I'm always putting a lot of effort into my submission grappling.
I mean, we've seen you submit guys before. We've seen you submit guys with, you know, 1 second left in a 25-minute fight, which is amazing in and of itself. But as you went through your prep work for this fight, was that something that you thought was in the cards? That, you know what, hey, I'll go down to the ground with him and tap him?
You know, I don't, like I said, ever since I was an amateur, I've never put predictions on my fights. You know, I'm well-rounded enough that if I see something, I can capitalize on that. And I think after the fight, when I got up, I looked at my coach's face, they're like, what? Good job. And I mean, I have the skill set to do it. So I was happy to be able to work the things that we worked on, and then everything just worked out perfect.
In terms of what he was doing in the fight, it seemed like he had a fairly solid-looking game plan. You were never around to get hit on the end of most of his punches. Do you feel that was the situation in there?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. You know, I worked extremely hard this camp. I was very focused, and we watched a lot of video on him. We had Bibiana Fernandez come down, work with me, Matt, and the rest of the guys, and like, okay, you know, I'm the man from the jungle. I'm pure jiu-jitsu. This is what he likes to do. And for us to be able to take a step back and listen to Bibiano and ask him questions, you know, as a jiu-jitsu practitioner, why do you want to do this? Why does this make you feel comfortable? So when we got in there, you know, last night while everybody was out, you know, rehydrating, having a good time, like, yeah, I made weight. I was in my workout room working out, going over the things we needed to do to execute. And Tyron Woodley was there to witness it. And he goes, dude, like, I literally just watched what you were doing last night in the training room in the octagon.
You're the number one guy in the world right now. You've set yourself up to be the number one guy of all time. Are you at a point yet, like in this 10 title fight run, where you can start ranking some of your performances? And if so, where does something like this kind of fall on the list?
Well, it's hard because I haven't been able to see it yet. I haven't seen the fight. But it was a good one. I think everything that we worked on, I would say the NCAA wrestling tournament kind of got me fired back up. Matt Hume's son, he just started wrestling, and them going and hearing them talking about all wrestling was awesome last night. So I was like, I need to get my wrestling back on point. You know, my background's wrestling. I've out-wrestled guys who've gone to college and wrestle. So that was a huge inspiration for me to get my wrestling, and my takedown defense tonight was perfect, even though he's been able to blast through people. and they had a great game plan. You know, I talked to Dominic Cruz already. He goes, you guys are well prepared.
Now that you've accomplished the 10 straight successful defenses, can you put it into perspective what that means now that you've done something that only Anderson Silva has done. You have a chance to break that record now.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome. I think any champion in the UFC or any sport, you know, the Chicago Bulls, you know, when Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Dennis Rodman were together, they wanted to try to get as many championships as they could. For me, you know, I got 10. I could take this belt home, and hopefully next time I fight, I can break it. And then I might go for 13 or 14. Why not set the bar high? You know, Usain Bolt, he's the fastest man on land. I'm the fastest man in mixed martial arts. So I'm going to keep on proving that, and hope I can set it to like 15. Then I'll retire. Then I'm like, okay, Matt, I'm done. Brad, it's awesome. Let's just train together and keep on getting better and not put my body through, you know, the turmoil of cutting weight and the aches and bruises.
Demetrius, before you could even really get back out of the octagon, you were asked a question about Cody No Love. Mm-hmm. Shortly thereafter on Twitter, you mentioned that he feels like you're still ducking, that you're dodging him. Is it just more the case that you have more unfinished business in the flyweight division?
You know, the whole thing with Cody, I'm not really worried about it, dude. Like, if somebody comes, I've never turned anybody down to come to my weight class, right? Like, I have nothing but love for the guy, but at the same time, he just won a belt. You know, he just won a belt. I've defended it 10 times. I've been in the sport longer than he has. Like I said, if he comes down and wants to fight at 125, we welcome it. But he doesn't get to dictate. Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe he does get to dictate supporting Dana White. I don't know. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. If Cody comes down to 125 and UFC deems him ready for a title shot, perfect. We can get him up. But until then, he's got to fight TJ Dillashaw. Then they just signed a new 135er, Mullen Moraes, and Dominic Cruz is still there. So for me, I'm just focused on, you know, making history, going for 11 title defenses, and then I have options. And I can decide, like, you know what, maybe I'll go up to 35 and fight him for his belt. You don't have to cut 25. You just keep on defending your belt. You get three or four belts on, you know, title defenses, and I'll come up. Then I'll fight you. Then you don't have to worry about cutting 10 more pounds. Or unless you want to, then that's fine too.
Going back to your division and that 11th title defense, you'll hear a lot from fighters in general and champions. You know, it doesn't matter who you put in front of me, but if you absolutely 100% had to pick a name for an 11th title defense, who is it?
It would be Chael Sonnen, because he would sell the hell out of that pay-per-view. You said pick a name, and I did. There you go.
All right.
Or Conor McGregor. I mean, nowadays everybody's talking about big money fights, right? Big money fights. I am not afraid of one man in this whole UFC octagon roster. I truly don't care. What's going to happen to me? I lose? I get knocked out?
Yeah, well, you've already defended this 10 times.
Well, I know, but I mean, a lot of people are calling him, oh, fight him. He's scared. I was like, dude, I'll fucking fight Conor McGregor for the biggest payday in my life.
Right.
If I got knocked out, perfect. Thanks, Conor. You weigh 170 pounds, but guess what? I'm going to be laughing all the way to the bank. So when people try to call me out, like, oh, you're scared, it's like, no, dude. Like, come on, 125, we can fight. But if you ask me, who would I like to fight, and I know I'm going to make the most money, I'll fight Conor McGregor.
So Demetrius Johnson, man, I don't see how you can't be a fan. Hopefully he's got your respect. Hopefully at this point you're a fan. It's just I just don't see why he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. And I'm done talking about it. I'm done asking about it. You know, we had a great conversation this week. It's obvious he doesn't care. He's happy with where he's at. You know, financially would love to make some more money, but isn't going to do anything ridiculous to do it. And he's good where he's at, man. And you know what? I'm just done. You start setting all-time UFC records. I'm done talking about what the casual fan thinks about you or why you don't get, you know, as much respect as you think you deserve or whatever else the case may be. It just doesn't even matter anymore, man. You're setting all-time UFC records. That's all that you need to know. That's all that you need to know. All right, co-main event. And let me just say, while the audio was playing, Moro Ranallo back in Japan. Love it. Lenny Hart shouting things out. Man, rising, doing it big, dude. I love it. All right, co-main event, Rose Namajunas defeats Michelle Waterson. Second round submission. My God, how good did Rose Namajunas look? Man, I'll tell you what, you know, going into this matchup, I was riding the Karate Hottie hype train, I guess. You know, I always had my concerns about Michelle Waterson. You know, is she a true strawweight? I mean, a former atomweight champion, and she's tiny. She is really tiny. A badass, skilled, no question about it. Incredible representative of the sport. You know, somebody that the UFC will likely continue to market, will continue to have big fights, and, you know, wouldn't be surprised to see her at a broadcast desk or on a microphone at some point in her career. I'm not saying she needs to walk away. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. I mean, she's got a great image. She's well spoken. She's professional. Everything about her is fantastic. But I've always had the concerns about her size. And then you put her up against somebody like Rose Namajunas, who certainly has that, you know, kind of lanky, rangy body. And I thought it was a concern. But, you know, truthfully, I think what it boiled down to me was Rose, to me, has always had, like, some confidence issues. Like, second-guessing herself a little bit. And maybe, I hate to use the term choke, man. That sounds like I just hate that term. It sounds awful. But just coming up short in the biggest situations, right? And I thought this might be one of those situations where it was just a little bit too much for her. A little bit too much for Rose right now. I mean, she's still early in her career. She's still learning. And it was not. Rose looked fabulous. And the way she finished this fight, the highlight reel finish, that beautiful high kick, which, good Lord. Props to Michelle for even surviving that first blow. Man, if you saw the high kick last night in the LFA event, I mean, it certainly could have been a stone-cold knockout just like that. Survived it, but then Rose got down there and got the job done on the ground. And, you know, I think this was a situation, at least from my point of view, where I think I probably read too much into mental states and intangibles and things like that. But just this is the thug Rose that I think everybody believes she can be. And that if she is this person, she's going to be dangerous. This was an incredible performance to do it on Fox, to do it against Michelle Waterson, who had a little bit of, hype behind her, you know, was having a little bit of momentum. This is huge for Rose. And I tell you what, I think it makes perfect sense that she gets a title shot next. I really do. And I know she had the title shot before, and I know there's other people in the division, but I do think it makes sense that she gets the title shot next. And I'll tell you what, she's dangerous. She's dangerous. Now, there are some other fighters in the division that could maybe say that she doesn't deserve it right now, but, you know, she's not ranked number one contender in the division. But I think you put her up against that UFC 211 winner between Joanna Jacek and Jessica Andrade. I think she's the right fighter for that. I mean, Gadella, you know, if Andrade wins, I guess she can step in and say that she's got a case. But, you know, if they don't fight till June, she fights Carolina Kovacevic after that fight. So they got to wait around. Carla Esparza is in there against Marina Moroz, but, you know, Carla Esparza's star is not that great right now. Jessica Aguilar versus Courtney Kate. I mean, there are some good fights lined up at strawweight right now, but I just don't think the hype is any greater than right now with Rose Namajunas. And it's crazy because she's got that record, you know, where she's still early in her career. What, 6-3 now? I mean, it's bizarre, right? But damn, she's so good. And if she can put this type of performance together, I'm telling you what, I'm not saying I'd pick her against Joanna and Jacek. I don't know how you pick anybody against Joanna and Jacek right now. She's Joanna champion, right? She's a beast. But man, her size, her range, the way she's built, you know, that ranginess is going to cause some issues for anybody in the division. And that grappling ability that she has, the scrambles that she creates, I don't know, man, just her approach to it. When she's on, she's on. And I'll tell you what, sign me up for her against Joanna or Jessica. I love that fight either way around. I think she earned it. And UFC President Dana White, you know, did some of his interviews. He kind of said the same thing. He's like, look, again, nothing's certain until you have it. Nothing's certain until you have it. But it sounds like everybody's on board, and I think it's the right decision. So let's hear a little bit from Rose Namajunas, who again, kind of has her confidence back, has the self-belief that's good to see. I feel like she's turning a corner right now. I feel like she's also going to have to turn a corner in her password management system, because she had a funny little moment here when she talked to the media after the fights.
Hey, Rose.
Hi.
Congrats. That was amazing victory. Nice job.
Thank you.
Talk to us about that a little bit, how good it felt, because we talked earlier in the week about, you know, a little bump in the road that you had last summer, but you felt like you were back and ready to prove something this time.
Yeah, it feels really good to have my team all together and in the corner. I don't know, I just was flowing out there. I had a little bit of I had to get my movement kind of, you know, I felt like I made a few mistakes in the first round, but I just had to stay calm and go back to the corner and just take a deep breath. And second round, I knew it was going to come together.
You were the betting favorite in this fight, but still it felt like a lot of people completely overlooked you. Like it was sort of a situation of, what have you done for me lately? And she had done something lately and you hadn't necessarily.
Right.
Did it feel like that to you? And if so, how vindicated do you feel getting a win the way that you did?
I don't know if it necessarily felt like that strongly to me, just because I don't really pay attention to that stuff anymore, you know? It used to have an effect over my life, but I don't really pay attention. I mean, my phone has been off, almost the entire week. So, to me, just eliminating those outside voices is the best, and just listening to you. And, that's kind of, what I expected, you know? It's just part of the business. That's just how people think. You know, the hardcore fans that are, you know, about me, they always are going to support me. And I think that they're always going to, you know that I'm capable of greatness. But, I think that the kind of, uneducated fans is the ones that's, kind of behind the hype trains and stuff like that. But I don't know if she really had a hype train, because, I mean, she had a spectacular performance. I mean, she was glowing at the weigh-ins. Like, she's on point. I take nothing away from her. Like, she was ready, and I knew that going into this fight, so, yeah.
In terms of what to expect physically from her in the fight, she seemed to have a strategy of going after your knee, and in the second round, it seemed like you were kind of slapping at your knee and slapping at your leg as if you were inviting her, you know what, keep doing this because it doesn't bother me. Was that what you were trying to sort of say with that?
Yeah, definitely, shutting down people's best weapon is definitely the key to beating your opponents. And that was kind of my way of doing that. I actually planned on doing that beforehand because I knew she was going to do that. I know that Jackson camps, they like to attack the knees like that a lot. You know, John Jones is pretty notorious for that. So, it still was messing me up too. I knew she was going to do it, but it was just really quick. And it was kind of throwing me off just a little bit. But I just made it up in my mind that that's not going to bother me. You know, it's just a defensive tactic. I'm not going to let that break me. And I'm going to break her with it, knowing that it's not bothering me.
When Dana was in here earlier, he said he believes you are indeed, you know, ready for another title shot. Can you just kind of reiterate what kind of plan you have? I mean, are you ready for that to be the next one? If you need to take one or two in the meantime, is that what you're willing to do? What's the situation?
Yeah, I mean, there's no need to get too specific just right this second, but I changed all my email and computer passwords to ANU 2017, so that's kind of just what I have in mind, just that general goal. So sometime it's before the year's over with, but I won't put no specific stamp on it just yet. Yeah, I didn't change all my passwords, but almost all of them. you gotta tell yourself these things.
So again, Rose Namajunas has her eyes set on the title, and maybe she'll be in Dallas. Maybe she'll be in Dallas sitting cage side for that fight. I think it certainly makes sense. Looks phenomenal. Again, meaningful fights, great performances. And it continued down the card. How about Robert Whittaker picking up the second round TKO win over Ronaldo Jacare Souza? Man. Whittaker just keeps proving people wrong, including me. I said it going in, I thought the guy was making a mistake in the beginning when he moved up to 185. I thought, man, this guy's a 170er all day long. What's he doing going up to 185? He's gonna get outclassed, outsized up there, man. It's not good. And then he just keeps racking up win after win after win. And then he gets himself into a fight with Jacare Souza. And you say, well, good for him, but this is Jacare. This is a guy that's at the top level. This is the upper echelon. Whitaker just destroys him. Just destroys him. Goes to the ground in the first round and never panicked. Never made any mistakes. Just did what he had to do. Kept the basics. And got himself back to his feet. Shook free. Incredible. And you know, it's funny because a lot of discussion going into this fight was about the fact that, you know, Souza was going into the final fight of his deal. Was it going to go somewhere else? Then you think about that, you know. Would there be some uneasiness going into the fight? But he gets the deal signed, right? One day before the deal signed. So you're like, okay, man, everything is in Souza's corner right now. He's been, you know, he's right there. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Whitaker came out and looked absolutely incredible. And still so young. 26 years old and just beat Jacare? Man. It's interesting because the middleweight division is so convoluted right now. We know that George St. Pierre and Michael Bisping is going to happen. I hope it happens in July. And that's no offense to George St. Pierre. I know he's trying to push back to later in the year, and no disrespect to him for doing that, but this fight made sense if it happened in the summer. If it puts everybody on hold in the fall, I know it's amazing to see GSP back, and I know it's, you know, would be a chance of history for him to hold a title in a second weight class, but I got to be honest, man, if this thing's going to happen in the fall and hold everybody off, man, you are doing a great number of people a disservice. And I get it. GSP's a legend. He's earned the right to do whatever the hell he wants to do. But you are doing a lot of people a disservice. I mean, I've got to think Yoel Romero would be okay with fighting Robert Whittaker. I got to think Yoel Romero, again, would probably push for an interim title fight. But I've got to think Yoel feels good about the matchup with Whittaker. Maybe more so than he did with Jacare. I mean, Jacare, the way their styles come together, you know, Jacare has the potential to be the answer to Yoel Romero, right? And I scored the first fight for Jacare anyway. So I could see Yoel Romero being a little hesitant to take that. I could see him being less hesitant. And again, no disrespect to Robert Whittaker. Maybe this is just a case of continued underestimation of him. But I got to think that Yoel will be pretty comfortable taking him. But I don't know. You know, you got Luke Rockhold coming out saying that he would like to fight Robert Whittaker in July. I like that matchup. I like that matchup a lot. Some good fights out there. Here's the other thing I find pretty interesting. Not sure if you saw social media or not, but Michael Bisping quickly took to Instagram and was sure to speak to all the Jacare fans and tell people to get off his Instagram. Was rude in the way he presented it. But, you know, it's funny because Whitaker's probably a better matchup for Bisping, right? I mean, if Bisping had to fight one of those guys, he'd probably take Whitaker over Jacare, right? Things just keep falling in Bisping's way. And Whitaker has the fact that they were supposed to fight in Australia. He says, "You owe me a fight." I love the fact that he came out and said that. Now, he didn't hard sell it. He kind of had a little smile to it or whatever. But he said it. So, I dig it. The juice. Whitaker, young kid. How exciting is this guy in this matchup, this victory? Absolutely incredible. Now, Whitaker, not one for a lot of words, but you got to hear from the guy. See what he's got lined up.
Robert, congrats, man. Holy cow, dude. That was kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah, thank you very much. It was a good fight.
I'd say it was a good fight. It got you another $50,000, which is pretty nice, right?
Definitely. You know, every cent that I can give back to my training staff and, you know, provide my family for is always good.
He had a couple moments in the fight where he did some good things, but you were dominant from start to finish. Did you expect the fight to go that way, where you just really, really controlled things throughout?
Expects not the word. It's I prepared for the fight to be that way. I've been training countless hours, you know, in the gym, out of the gym, for this fight, and we went through all the situations and scenarios that could possibly happen, and we drilled them. And this was a scenario that you know, that might have that arose, and I had been working that, and you know, I executed a game plan.
When you hurt him, do you remember the first time that you hurt him in the fight, and did you feel anything kind of go out of him at that point? Could you feel that in the fight?
I think it might be a fighter thing, or maybe it's part of who I am. But I know when I've hurt my opponent, and when I know I've hurt my opponent, I know how to keep hurting my opponent. I know how to use that to my advantage, and you know, I did that.
Did you feel overlooked at all? I mean, I think if you look at the betting numbers, he was like a 3-1 favorite or something like that. So that would seem to say that the odds makers were overlooking you, even if some of the fans might not have been. But did you feel that going into the fight, and did that put any kind of a chip on your shoulder?
Not at all. You know, the odd makers don't know who I am. You know, I live in Australia. I train out of there. I stay down there. I'm so far away from everywhere else, you know. But I don't think Jacare overlooked me either. You know, he's a veteran of the sport, you know, all props to him. And he would have taken me seriously from day dot. And but it just is how it went, you know.
Obviously, you mentioned in the cage afterwards that you'd be interested in a fight with Michael Bisping. That's probably not in the cards immediately. What kind of plans do you have then in terms of getting to a title shot? I mean, do you take 2-3 fights, whatever it takes, in the meantime before that title picture clears up, or do you sit back and chill?
You know, that's a discussion I have with my corners and stuff, but I'm on my title run. I'm on my run. I want that belt. You know, Bisping owed me a fight. If he's tied up or if he loses it or whatever, I want that belt. You know, wherever it goes, I want it.
Robert, at one point, Jacare took you down and took your back briefly. What was going through your mind right then? And then when you were able to escape, how much did it help your confidence?
I don't know if it helped my confidence in the match per se. It's, I had been working countless hours, you know, with Alex Perates and Hugo Nunes. They've been drilling me in the worst situations. And I knew to stay calm, collected. He has to keep me there. And I know how to wrestle. I know how to grapple. And I just got to get back up.
Luke Rockhold has offered to face you at July at UFC 213. Is this something you'd be interested in and ready for?
It's news to me. You told me.
Well, I'm telling you. He tweeted it out to Ariwanian. So I'm passing the information along.
It's cool. Like, but it's too fresh. I got to get back home to my kids. I got to see my wife. Let me see my family first. You know what I mean? It's a bit rushed. It's too much to process at once.
So Robert Whittaker, man, kid just keeps getting better and better. Fun to watch this young talent rise up the ranks, man. It's this was the coming out party, man. You beat Jacare. It's not a joke anymore, man. It's not a maybe. The dude is the real deal. All right, the main card started out. Renato Morgano picked up a split decision win over Jeremy Stephens. Bit of an odd fight, right? I mean, Morgano fought smart. You're not going to stand right in front of Jeremy Stephens. You got to move, right? You got to move around. You got to create angles, escape, that sort of thing. Crowd definitely didn't like it. And this was a great crowd. Man, Kansas City crowd was phenomenal all night. You know, big venue, big crowd, but they were loud. But, you know, you can't – they didn't like this one. There were a lot of boos coming through it. I was sitting here at home in Las Vegas and could pick up on that. It was funny because I was watching home and not doing a play-by-play and you know, I didn't have to – I could kind of soak in social media a little bit. And it was funny to see the reaction on social media, the split. You know, it was like every other tweet. One, Moicano is smart, is fighting intelligently. The next tweet, this dude sucks. The next tweet, you know, I mean, it was just back and forth. It seems like people were split down the middle, and I guess that makes sense in a split decision. But some people loved what Moicano was doing, and some people absolutely hated it. I think it was understandable. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. You know, Jeremy Stephens, man, as dangerous as he is, I feel like he doesn't necessarily make the adjustments he needs to sometimes. So, you know, he's the bull in the china shop, so to speak. He's coming out there and you know, looking to do work, but when things aren't going his way, doesn't necessarily make the adjustments and the tweaks that he needs to. So wanted to pull the trigger on Moicano coming into this fight. And I should say, by the way, just another shit day of picks for me, man. What a horrible 2017 this has been for me. But yeah, yeah, I wanted to pull the trigger on picking him in the upset, but you know, just the gear layoff and the fact that he wasn't exactly convincing last time out, I wasn't sure. You know, I wasn't sure, and I thought he looked decent. I didn't think it was the most exciting fight, but I think it was the right fight to fight against Jeremy Stephens. So for that, I'll give Moicano credit. No hate whatsoever. I think this was the right game plan, so to speak. All right, the preliminary card. Alexander Volkov picked up a decision win over Roy Nelson. Clear cut here, right? No questions about it. Volkov fought smart. You know, used that height, that reach, that length to his advantage. I thought he did a fantastic job of fighting the way you should fight when you have that type of height advantage. We don't always see that. We see people not necessarily, you know, use their God-given gifts to their advantage, and I thought he did a great job of it. I also thought Roy Nelson, you know, is just what Roy Nelson is at this point. I don't think Roy Nelson's heart and head is in it right now. This, I believe, in my understanding, is this was the final fight on his UFC contract, and I fully expect him to be leaving. Just the pre-fight social media slamming of the UFC, you know, saying that they're not promoting the fight. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to have that question. He does. He does. And I've had conversations with, I know he believes it. You know, I've had conversations with him behind the scenes as well. And I know he definitely thinks the UFC isn't promoting him right and not promoting his fights the way they should. And that's his right to feel. But I don't know. I don't want to ever question anybody's commitment. I hate seeing somebody going into a fight and it seems like, you know, they're upset with the circumstances around them. And I just don't ever think that's a good thing. I think, you know, you got to be a little bit at peace in your head or what have you. And he definitely wasn't. So, you know, is his heart in it? You know, when he's frustrated with his employers, is he really into it? I don't know. I mean, I know he loves the sport. You know, doesn't necessarily love the fighting aspect of it, but loves the martial arts aspect of it. And obviously this is how he takes care of his family. But I don't know. Hopefully Roy Nelson can get himself a clean start at Bellator, because I think that's where he's going to end up. I think he leaves the UFC. And, you know, fans love him. Man, there is no doubt about it. This dude is... people are attracted to him, man. He's got the it factor. He's got that something, that X factor that you can't, you know, you can't build unless you have it, and he's got it. So, yeah, good win for Alexander Volkov. Very respectful afterwards, saying he's not calling anybody out. He knows he's new, that he's got to, you know, develop his spot in the sport, and he's not calling anybody out right now. But you can make waves in the heavyweight division pretty quick, so. We'll see what happens. I think hopefully Roy enjoys his new career in Bellator, because I think that's where he'll end up. And we'll see what Alexander Volkov can become. Now, another guy that's got something. How about Tom Dukunois? Guy has been the European it kid for a long time. Everybody from the European scene will tell you what this kid is all about, and he came in and got it done, man. Young kid. Hailing from France. If you didn't watch the fight, definitely make sure you check it out. Just 23 years old, been on on everybody's radar for quite some time. Bama product and came out and did what he was expected to do against Patrick Williams. I thought, you know, Tom Dukunois was not nervous early, but didn't, you know, he didn't come out and just dominate. It's not like he came out and smoked somebody in 30 seconds, but you know, it was his UFC debut, and he came out afterwards and said, yeah, I was a little bit nervous, it was a little bit tough, but man, nearly finished the fight at the end of the first round. I thought honestly they could have called the fight at the end of the first round, landed some elbows, Patrick Williams collapsed to the floor, and I thought they could have called the fight right there, to be honest with you. Patrick Williams, you know, kind of stumbled as he got up. But he went back out there. But, you know, props to Tom Dukunois, man. He saw what was happening, and he got the job done. Came out there and just, you know, brutal barrage of elbows again right away. Got the job done. And this kid looks like the real deal at bantamweight. How exciting is bantamweight right now, man? This kid comes in. Marlon Moraes just signed there. Bantamweight, damn, more exciting than it's ever been before. A lot of names there. But let's hear from Tom Dukunois. I like the kid's attitude, man. He's he's not afraid to say what he wants. He's not afraid to say what he's working towards. Not going to rush in it. He had a chance to be in the UFC a few years ago, wanted to develop a little bit more. So, I don't know. I like this kid. I think, you know, if you have friends from Europe, you've heard about this guy. I mean, they've been preaching about how wonderful he is, and he showed it. But I like what I hear from him on the mic as well. He seems very refined and professional in his approach. I don't know, man. Kid looks like he's pegged for stardom.
What did you think about tonight, the whole experience?
Good. Glad to be here. You know, UFC is a dream come true. But it is also the continuity of my professional goals. So it's a mix of that's normal, and a mix of I'm really glad actually, because it's a big thing. You know, I used to fight for a lot of main events, but you can compare with a show like UFC.
How did it feel, the walkout? Did you feel, were you nervous? Were you excited? Like, what was it?
Again, that's the mix of both. Now you have to convert the negative stress into a positive stress, and that's what I'm trying to do. And actually, I'm a little bit stressed for sure, a little bit nervous, because stepping into a cage is not something natural for someone. But it's overwhelming. I like it. I like the sensation. I feel like I'm made for it, and I like it. I like the whole process of the fight week. I like to step into the cage. That's my work, but it's also my pleasure.
In the first round, you got dropped, right? You got hit with something, and it looks like you fell down. They never showed the replay, so it was
hard to tell. A loss of balance, probably. A loss of balance. The Patrick Williams are very powerful, very explosive, very unpredictable, and I think he catch me with the right hand, probably, and I lose my balance, so maybe I put a knee on the ground. I don't think I was I was touched at that point, but I don't want to underestimate him. He did a very good fight. He's very tough, and he has the UFC level, no problem.
Speak to the elbows. Was that a big part of what the game plan was? Because I think you did the most damage and ultimately ended the fight with the elbows, but is that something you were working on, or something that just came from the flow of the fight?
Yeah, I think both. From the very beginning of my career, I've been always using elbows. It is also one of the things I work a lot every day. That's one of the European thing, because we have a high level in kickboxing and Muay Thai over there. So against the high level American wrestlers, I'm trying to use the elbow like an anti-wrestling game, you know. The guys I heard, they're very strong of the upper body. Sometimes I'm less strong, especially against Patrick, who are very strong. So at that time, I'm trying to use the elbow, because he's not used to the middle distance, either in boxing, either in wrestling. So I'm good at it. So at that time, I'm trying to use the elbow, and it works. I'm glad it works.
When you landed the elbow right at the end of the round and it dropped him, you kind of walked away and you went to your corner. Did you realize how much damage you had caused him at the end of that round?
I was about to finish him. I was about to. The bell rang, but I felt that was the end. So it motivates me to continue the round and inhale, exhale, and be ready for the next one. So in my head, I wanted to try to finish him at that point, and I felt that I was about to arrive.
What's next? I know you just had an amazing fight, yeah. But where do you feel you are? Are you one of those, are you like John Jones? Like, I'm ready to go for that. You know, when he was your age, you know, I'm ready to go for that belt. Or do you want to take it slow?
Step by step. Feeling question, timing question. I'm aware of that life. You don't just have MMA. MMA is my main thing, my professional goals, and I will do everything to get the belt as soon as possible. But in another way, you have to respect certain steps, either psychologically, experience, and technically. So I want to do the thing step by step, as I always did in my career. So I will be sure to win the title. You know?
So big things happening in the bantamweight division, and man. Maybe a new star was born. We'll see what Duke can wop. All right, Rashid Magomedov picked up a split decision win over Bobby Green. Not a great fight. Just not a whole lot of pace there, to be honest with you. Magomedov has an impressive record in the UFC, but admitted afterwards that, you know, his contract is up and really doesn't know where he's going to go next. Would not be surprised to see if he's one of those guys that doesn't get a contract offered to him. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but we know the UFC is trimming fighters. And here's a guy that, you know, has gone to a decision, I think, 5 out of 6 times in the UFC. Doesn't necessarily have a huge following, fan following, so to speak, and might find himself being a little too expendable. And Bobby Green, man, how do you not like Bobby Green? His interview with Matt Erickson earlier in the week where he talked about, you know, his baby mama drama and all that. I mean, the guy just wears his heart on his sleeve, but just doesn't seem to turn it up sometimes when he needs to. So, fight was not great, but Rashid Magomedov took home a split decision win. No problem with that. Tim Elliott, Lewis Smolka, was the opposite of that. Good Lord, was this fun, man. Two flyweights just going at it. We had a feeling this could be fun, right? I mean, two high-paced, scrambling flyweights. Thought it could be a lot of fun, and it was everything it lived up to. It did get Fight of the Night honors, and deservedly so, man. That was a just nonstop battle. Tim Elliott, the rightful winner here. One of those fights that, 30-27 on all three cards, but just doesn't even begin to tell the story of what was happening in this fight. Just a classic. I mean, Dana White comes out afterwards and said it's kind of one of those once-in-a-lifetime type fights. amazing. It was a lot of fun. Worth going back and seeing if you missed it. Definitely put that one on your list of fights you need to watch. Elliot, man, again, you know, you're talking about guys that Demetrius Johnson has already beat, right? But it's not fair to say they're not talented. It's just not. But this was a great fight, and I think it did show the fact that there is talent in the flyweight division, but Demetrius Johnson just a cut above them. All right, the fight pass prelims. Aljamain Sterling picked up a unanimous decision win over Augusto Mendes. Tanquinho, who, by the way, Tanquinho just fights nobody but beasts in the UFC. Respect the hell out of him for trying to test himself early on, but good Lord, man. Push for an easier fight. But Aljamain Sterling to pick up the decision win, 29-28 in all three cards. Augusto definitely tired as the thing went on. But Aljamain, big win for him. Very emotional afterwards. You could see, you know, kind of a tear in his eye a little bit as he collapsed to the ground. This was a huge one for him. I still think Aljamain has a lot of talent. I really do. You know, speaking of that bantamweight division, I think he is a legitimate prospect. I think he's gotten some hate along the way for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because he had hype, because he was a little bit cocky. Is it the gold chain? Is it the – I don't know what it was. But he's definitely got some hate along the way. But I think he's definitely got some talent, and I think he's definitely got some bright days ahead of him. But I wanted you to hear this, because afterwards, with cold coffee rolling in the back, Aljamain let it out, man. Real harsh criticism of the judges. And didn't shy away from it, you know. Said, you know, kind of tried to spin it a little bit and say that, you know, maybe it had made him better because judges had been poor. And it kind of made him, you know, change his game a little bit. But wanted you to definitely hear this, because I think it's interesting comments. Maybe some validity to what he's saying. Maybe some just frustration. I don't know. Check it out, Aljamain, not afraid to speak his mind.
So coming into this fight, you're on 2-fight losing streak. Did you feel the pressure?
I felt some pressure. It wasn't really pressure that I had shit performances. It was more so pressure that I wanted to win for, one, my team. Two, I started coming out to the Jamaican flag with the Jamaican colors, you know, tribute to my motherland. I mean, I'm born in the U.S., proud American. My parents and their parents are born in Jamaica. And I just wanted to get a win for my countrymen, you know, let them know, like, the MMA is developing in Jamaica, and there isn't many gyms, and there's not a lot of opportunities for folks down there. So I want to be that staple for them to look up to, like, yo, there's opportunity if you make the right transitions and you do the right things to get to where you want to be. So, I felt like there was a lot riding on this fight in terms of being that figure for these guys to look up to, and my family, my friends, my team, and it felt great to go out there and finally get my hand raised again. I felt like I haven't had my hand raised since 2015, December 9th against Johnny Eduardo, man. Goddamn, that was a long time ago.
Talk a little bit about during the fight, I mean, it seemed like you were pretty much having your way. How soon into the fight did you feel comfortable you can keep it standing? Because I think at one point we thought you'd throw a lot more leg kicks, but it seemed like you were comfortable and you wanted to keep it standing and throwing arms.
You know, it was, you know, people, I realized judges don't understand what the hell kicks are doing. So I threw a lot less kicks than what I'm really accustomed to, and I had to change my fight style to adapt to what the judges understand because their lack of experience and lack of knowledge of the sport and what leg kicks and what body kicks do, you know? And people could say that's disrespectful. I don't give a shit, man. If you don't know what the hell the martial arts are, why are you a judge? You know, so now I got to adapt my style because you're not smart enough to comprehend what's actually taking place in the octagon. And don't get me wrong, there's a lot of fights where it's just a ton of confusion, and I don't even know how to score the fight. And it's just like, you just do a coin flip. Whoever gets wins or call it a draw. There's not enough draws. People don't understand kicks. They don't understand grappling exchanges. I had 29-28. I thought I won all three rounds. He had me in a body lock against the cage in the second round and did no damage there. I'm slapping him in the face. I'm prying his face up. I'm stomping his feet. I'm like, I took him down and I start going off with the hammer fist and everything. I'm like, man, I think I stole that round back for him just stalling out the action. But it is what it is. I honestly, I forgot what the question really even was before I just went off on that rant. But yeah, I threw a lot more punches. And I think if I had just done that a little bit more against the Sunset, it would have been easier for the judges to understand who was actually winning the fight. I don't think anything was different from this fight and the fight against the Sunset. I think I used my footwork, my feints. I was against the cage a lot, but every time he threw a haymaker, whoop. Can't touch this. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's the same thing against the Sunset. I just didn't follow up with strikes. I threw kicks instead of punches. Now they like, oh, shit, well, he's throwing punches, so I understand that. And, you know, he's actually landing something, so maybe he is winning the fight. As to me, fighting is, I'm the matter, you know, I'm ole. You know, this is Toro. You swing and you miss, you know? And he landed some good shots. I think I landed some good shots. I thought the crowd was into it. And that's what I do, man. I try to entertain and try to keep the fights fun and entertaining.
Was this fight more fun for you? Because you look like you did stand in the pocket much more than normal.
I think I stood in the pocket against the Sunset the entire fight. And it was to a point where I let him swing and he wasn't even trying to swing. So, yeah, I guess I did stay in the pocket once again, but I think I just threw more punches instead of kicks. You know, because Sunset was throwing stuff and I was countering and throwing kicks. This time he was throwing stuff against Mendez was throwing stuff and I was countering and throwing punches. I was slipping and throwing punches. I could have did that and thrown up head kicks as I'm weaving and he's missing that big haymaker. His back is turned. He can't see me and I could come up with that head kick, you know? And that's what I'm saying. There's so many different ways that the art of this sport can go and people don't really understand the intricacies that go into this, man. I put my heart and soul into this every single training, every single practice. And that's why it pains me so much. People may say, like, oh, he's a whiner, he's complaining. I'm just like, no, man, I just want you guys to give me 100% like I'm trying to give you guys 100%. I'm in here busting my ass. For you to just come off the couch and just go start judging a fight with no real experience, I think that's just kind of a slap in the face of what we do for a living. I think that's fair. It's like what you guys doing for your job or your job outside of that. And people are like just coming in and just think they could just take your job and with no prior experience. You're going to feel like someone just shitting your freaking bowl of Frosted Flakes or something. You know what I mean? But whatever, man. You know, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
All right, so Aljamain Sterling got a feeling, you know, might get some hate for that. Might get some judges that aren't exactly thrilled with what he had to say. But I don't know. It's interesting. It's tough because it's one of those things where you say, well, you know, what right do you have to judge me if you don't have the experience? And there's some truth to that. I mean, you know, it's like saying, as journalists, what right do we have to say to write about the fights or to give our opinions if we've never done it? I mean, okay, you can say it. I don't necessarily agree with it. I mean, if you judge thousands of fights, if you watch thousands of fights, then, you probably developed, you know, some concept of the sport. But that doesn't go back to the fact that you know, we don't have some issues with judging. I just don't know if it's necessarily phrased exactly right. But I did find it interesting, too, that Aljamain said, you know, he actively changed his style to try to meet what the judge is like. And I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. I just thought to hear somebody be that open and blunt about it, I thought it was definitely interesting. All right, Devin Clark just dominated Jake Collier. That was a great fight there for Devin Clark. He looked good, showing some improvement ever since the UFC debut. Anthony Smith with the come-from-behind knockout win of Andrew Sanchez. Big fan of Anthony Smith. I was talking to our good friend Simon Head earlier. It's a story I've shared before, but, you know, met Anthony Smith years before he ever made it to the UFC in an airport. And we were just sitting there talking about MMA, and you know, he was talking about his ambitions and what he was going to accomplish, and he was going to be in the UFC. And, you know, enjoyed talking to the guy, man. You know, pleasant conversation. Got on the plane, you know, pulled out my laptop and you know, searched his name because I hadn't heard of him at the time. Wanted to see, you know, kind of what he was about. And I think he was on a 4-fight losing streak at the time. But didn't shake his confidence whatsoever. Didn't change at all where he said he was going to be and what he thought he could accomplish. And sure enough, you know, a few years after that, yeah, he made it to the UFC. And, I've just been a big fan of the guy. It's a guy that can have that kind of self-belief and that kind of confidence, even, you know, in the midst of a losing streak and saying what he's going to accomplish. I've always been a huge fan of this guy. And did it again, you know. losing to Andrew Sanchez, no question about it. As he said rather eloquently, you know, in his fight, he was getting tagged by the right hand because he's worried about the takedown. And the entry to a takedown and an overhand right look a lot the same. And Anthony Smith was just getting fooled by that and getting tagged. And he finally made the adjustments. And, yeah, big win for Anthony Smith, man. Losing down on the cards, comes back. This just that's him in a nutshell, man. This guy just doesn't give up. He says, you will never break me. You can't shake me. And sure enough, he lived up to it. Fantastic. Zach Cummings, the technical submission win, guillotine choke over Nathan Coy. Zach Cummings was fired up. You know, the local guy was a little frustrated that he was on this position on the card, but got the submission win. Big win for him. Zach Cummings, a tough guy that I think definitely doesn't get the respect that he deserves. But I wanted to play this for you because, you know, if you watch this fight, incredibly late stoppage. He tapped out Nathan Coy. Didn't tap him out. He choked him out, I should say. The choke was definitely in, and Nathan Coy was out, and referee Mike England didn't see it. Was very late to the party. But Zach talked about it afterwards, and he said, listen, even I don't like this. It scares me. It's scary, but I've had situations in the past where I've let chokes go and then guys recover. And because of that, this is what I have to do. I'm not going to stop until the referee stops me. And I don't know, man. I found it to be very interesting. I want you to hear it directly from him because I think what he's saying is fair. I mean, that's the rules, right? Protect yourself at all times. You know, don't stop unless I command you to stop. You know, you go until the referee tells you to stop. But when you know, and he said very clearly, I knew he was out. He said, Zach said, I knew Nathan Coy was out, but I had to keep the choke on anyway. It's weird because just black and white, it sounds pretty dirty, right? Like, it sounds bad. Like, wait, you knew the guy was out and yet you hung on to it? It sounds rough, right? But what he's saying is true. I don't want to get, you know, cost a victory by a referee not seeing something. So, I don't know. I found it intriguing. I was working here from home in Las Vegas, and I was editing the stories that are the audio and the stories that are getting ready for tomorrow. And I don't know. This quote kind of caught my attention. Let me know what you think.
How quickly did you know that you had that choke?
Immediately. Once I had my arm all the way sunk around, I knew there was no getting out of it. I didn't know if the time might run out. I didn't know how much time was left, but I knew it was getting down towards the end of it. So since I stepped over, I knew it was over. He was out, I think, quite a while before they actually stopped it. So I knew I had it immediately, but I was just happy to get it before the bell rang.
Did you feel him go limp?
Yeah, I saw his arm go. His arm just went limp, and I saw it physically, and then I could feel him a little bit. But I knew it was out, but, I mean, I don't stop till the ref stops me, so I'm not going to mess up.
Did you feel any taps? Because I think Stan said he thought he tapped.
I didn't feel a tap. I don't know. Okay. I wasn't sure. I just saw his arm over here just went limp, and okay. I just kept squeezing until I got stopped. But I didn't feel a tap, no.
Okay. That choke kind of fighter, is it when you know the guy is out, like he's out, like how long are you going to hold that?
Man, absolutely. So
it was scary watching on TV.
Yeah, I know. It's a rough thing because I've had fights where they've tapped, I've let go, and the ref didn't stop it. So it's happened to me, you know, personally. So it's one of those where I knew he was out, but, you know, I mean, some guys play those little games where they'll act, you know, they'll start breathing weird or they'll do stuff, then you'll loosen it up and they'll wake up real fast. So I hate to do it, but really, I don't stop until the ref stops me. It just has to be that part, or else, you know, I let go early. He starts moving. You know, the fight goes to the second round. You never know what's going to happen, you know. So I hate it. It scares me. But, yeah, I mean, I don't stop. It's just, you can't do it.
All right. So interesting stuff there from Cummings. Certainly don't want to paint the picture that he's a dirty fighter, but thought it was kind of interesting for a guy to say, I hate this, but it's a reality of what I have to do. Interesting. All right, night started out with Kellen Vieira picking up a win in the first fight of the night. Ashley Evans-Smith was just a step behind all night long. Just no question about it. Kellen Vieira was the better fighter. That's all there is to it. Ashley Evans-Smith just a little bit out of sorts and a little bit behind the whole night. So that's it. UFC on Fox 24. Super, super fun card, man. Very entertaining. I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed it from home. But I promise, the MMA Roadshow is getting back on the road. Me and Cole Coffey back together next week. We'll be in Nashville for what looks to be another fun card. We'll get into that next week. We'll get into some other stuff as well. But we'll finally be back on the road. I spent enough time at home, damn it. Glad to have my family back. But it's time for me to get my ass back on the road. Putting the finishing touches on all the trips coming up after that. So while we've been at home for a little bit, that's going to change dramatically. We've got Sweden, Rio, Auckland, Singapore all coming up really, really soon. So we'll get back on the road and have a little fun. Anyway, that was UFC on Fox 24. I'm going to go back and watch some Rizin over here, man. I've been paying attention in the background. I've been turning some volume on during the interviews just so I could hear the call of Mauro Ranallo and Frank Shamrock. It's man, it's like a blast from the past, man. Just reminiscing. I tweeted earlier, it's like being in a time machine, man. I feel like I'm back in the day, man. This feels like watching Pride back in the day. So hopefully you get to check a little bit of that out too, or at least check out the highlights, because yeah, it is starting to get pretty late at night. And tomorrow's Easter, got to celebrate with the family. But in the meantime, I'm gonna watch a little Japanese MMA. Send this off to Cold Coffee so he can get the edit done and get this thing posted. And like I said, the crew will be back together next week. You can hear from Cold Coffee. I know you don't want to hear from me. You just want to hear from that guy. So anyway, hey, if you checked it out, I appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.